Hey listeners, quick question. Are you tired of overpaying for your mobile plan? I've got the answer. Ting Mobile. Ting Mobile is all about flexibility and savings. You only pay for what you use, no crazy fees or overages. It's perfect for those who want control over their phone bill without sacrificing quality. Say goodbye to bloated phone bills. Go to foxcitiesmm.com/ting. Ting Mobile. Mobile that makes sense.
You're listening to Milwaukee Mafia, your podcast dose of Wisconsin Mafia and true crime history.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Fox City's Murder and Mayhem. I'm Eric.
I'm Gavin.
And Gavin, we're back again.
We're back.
Where are we traveling to on this fine day?
A little bit of all over. We'll say Green Bay.
Okay, another Green Bay episode. He's loving his Green Bay episodes.
There's going to be some Green Bay episodes. Green Bay is going to be a little bit heavy for a while. Not going to be saying Kakana as much.
Boo.
But Green Bay gets a run. So, I don't know if you recall last time, but last time we talked about a doctor, his maid, his wife, a variety of things related to that.
If I remember right, this episode was going to be about another person from his family, but probably, if I think, was years down the road.
This is not years down the road. It is, but it's not like another generation. It's his brother.
Okay.
But yes, the incident that we'll be talking about happens after the previous one. Yes.
Okay.
So this is Dr. William Edward Minahan, another doctor in the family. It's a very successful family, a lot of doctors and lawyers and things of that nature. So Dr. William was born in Chilton, Wisconsin. His parents are Irish immigrants. His father was born in an island off the west coast of Ireland, worked as a county school superintendent when he got to Wisconsin. Dr. William Minahan first appears in the Wisconsin census in 1870. He's there with his many other brothers and sisters. His brothers Robert and John became doctors, as we had mentioned last time, John being the one we talked about. They were all very well-known surgeons. William, our subject today, probably being the best surgeon of the three.
Okay.
He was married in 1893 to Mary, who lived in Brothertown, Wisconsin, a nice little town by Chilton.
Never heard of it. Two people there or something?
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, it's by Stockbridge, by Quinney, it's by, you know, Cloten.
It's by nothing, pretty much.
Yeah, you know. She was a former classmate of his at the Oshkosh Normal School, the teacher's college. They went on to have a daughter, Maud, in 1894, but the couple was later divorced. William was remarried in 1903 to Lillian Thorpe, who was originally from Indiana. She was previously married to a portrait artist named Paul Lawrence, and Lillian was reportedly his muse. Not much is known about Paul Lawrence, other than apparently he really liked to paint pictures of Lillian.
Well, I thought you were going to say that this was, and he was the one that the name of Lawrence University came from.
No, nothing cool like that, huh? Through this marriage, there were no children, so just the child from his first marriage. The couple settled in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, where, you know, he was a very successful doctor. In 1912, William, his wife, and his sister Daisy decide they are going to take a trip to Ireland. Their parents are from Ireland, and it seems like a good idea to visit Ireland, because, you know, when you got the money and you're Irish, you visit Ireland. So they went there. They left from New York in January 1912 on the ship called the Berlin. The vacation that they were taking was supposed to last 6 months. So it was a serious vacation here.
They weren't playing around, were they?
No.
I would imagine, though, if you're going to get on a ship and sail over to Europe,
Yeah.
That you're going to do it for at least 6 months, man, yeah, at this point in time, you know?
Got to make it worth it. Daisy, William's sister, apparently got appendicitis while they were in Italy. They didn't know at first what it was, but once they figured out what it was, they had made their way to Paris in France, where she had emergency surgery. This really put a damper on the trip, and they thought, well, maybe we should go back to the U.S. a little sooner than we first planned, just in case there's complications, things like that. But before they came back, of course, they had to make sure they spent time in Ireland, so they spent some time visiting Killarney, Ireland. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but
in Ireland. Killarney is just a city, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they were like, oh, I guess we gotta sail back. Gotta get back to Wisconsin now. So they purchased their ship tickets. They bought some very nice first class tickets, because you can do that.
Wow. I would not have guessed in the 1900s.
1912.
They had first class ship tickets, but...
Yeah. They got on the ship in Ireland. Their tickets were 90 pounds apiece. I don't know if that's a lot, but...
It doesn't sound like very much.
And they were in a very nice cabin. The ship was a super nice ship, and they spent the evening in the Café Parisien.
Ooh, fancy.
Yeah. Enjoying the company of Major Archibald Butt. Archie Butt. And even the ship's captain. Before going to bed around 9:30, there were many other notable people hanging out in the ship's cafe because, you know, it's like that sometimes.
Mm.
Yeah. Around 11:40 p.m. on April 14th, 1912, Daisy wakes up to the sound of screaming. She hears a woman screaming in a nearby cabin. Daisy and Lillian made their way to the deck, wearing only their night clothes and kimonos. I'm not sure what a kimono is in this case. If that's just a word for robe, I'm not sure. Because I'm guessing they're not wearing like Japanese kimonos, but maybe. Their night clothes and kimonos, and carried blankets to fend off the cold night air. Dr. Minahan observed the disorganized activity and recognized that screaming wasn't just one person screaming. There was something very serious going on. The first class passengers had some level of order, but there were cries and shouts that could be heard on every level of the ship. Dr. Minahan's last words to his wife and his sister were, "Be brave." Daisy and Lillian were escorted to lifeboat number 14. Daisy and Lillian described the scene as being desperate, with crowds surging towards the boat and crewmen cursing at the men to keep back and let the women through. As the boat was lowering, the ropes kept jamming, causing the boat to descend jerkily and hang at precarious angles during the fall. Daisy feared that she might be thrown into the ocean. As the lifeboat's being lowered down, she also described how, as the boat passed each open deck, men jumped or attempted to jump into the boat, with the officer in charge of the lifeboat threatening to shoot any men who attempted to get on the lifeboat.
Wow.
Landing safely in the water, Daisy said that the boat rowed to a safe distance where a head count was taken. 48 people were in the lifeboat. So apparently the lifeboat's pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
The officer in charge asked everyone to search in the bottom of the boat for a lantern, but none could be found. Other things such as water and food were also not found. So the lifeboat not well prepared. Officer Lowe, in charge of the lifeboat, refused to transfer some of his passengers to another boat and return and rescue those drowning, telling the people on his boat, "You ought to be just damn glad you're here," instead of us going back and trying to get more. As the main ship was going down, Daisy described the sound of cries coming from those struggling in the water as horrible. Many women in the boat implored Lowe to return to the scene to help rescue some of those struggling for life. And Daisy states that he was reluctant to do so, as I kind of said.
Mm-hmm.
Although Lowe would eventually redistribute Boat 14's passengers among other lifeboats and return to pick up a handful of survivors, Daisy remained critical of his overall conduct, stating that when she was waiting to change it to another lifeboat, he barked at her, "Jump, goddamn you, jump," despite her having shown no hesitation. Apparently, he was just panicked and rude the whole time. Daisy and the other women thought that he was perhaps under the influence of liquor, and they were appalled by his use of profanity. Daisy and Lillian were transferred to Collapsible Boat D. I don't know what a collapsible boat is. If that's just like an inflatable raft, I don't know. Not sure what that means.
Do you? Maybe you said this and I missed this, but do we know how far away they are from land at this point in time?
I think pretty far.
Okay. So they're literally just, what, hanging out in this boat hoping somebody sails by to pick them up?
Yeah.
Okay.
They were transferred to Collapsible Boat D and eventually sighted by the ship, the Carpathia, around 4 a.m., which is about 5 hours later. So, Eric.
Yeah?
I was waiting for you to catch on here, but you didn't say anything.
Okay. I guess I didn't catch on. What was I supposed to catch on to?
What's the name of the boat they're in?
Well, you just said that there was a Carpathia.
That's the one that picked them up. What boat were they in?
What the name of the boat was.
I didn't say what the name of the boat was.
Okay. Was it the Titanic?
It's the Titanic.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, the whole time I'm like, wow, it's kind of neat to like hear a real life story of like something like the Titanic. I didn't realize it was the Titanic.
It's the Titanic. When they reached New York, Lillian and Daisy were taken to the home of fellow survivors in New Jersey until Robert Minahan could come from Green Bay to pick them up. Two ships sailed out from Canada to look for any remaining bodies in the water. Anybody who was floating around could be picked up. Maybe two young lovers trying to share a floating door.
Thanks, James Cameron.
Yeah. The Minahan family really hoped that Dr. Minahan would be found alive, but unfortunately, he was picked up and tagged as body number 230 until he could be identified. Once identified, he was brought back to Green Bay and buried in a very beautiful crypt. For people not familiar with the Titanic story, there were originally 2,209 passengers on the ship. Mm-hmm. Of those, 1,497 died.
Wow.
Just an obscene amount of people. So Daisy and Lillian actually making it back to Wisconsin, very lucky considering how few actually got out.
Yeah, no kidding.
Dr. Minahan's estate was valued at $81,000, which 1912 is probably pretty good money. He also had life insurance policies worth as much as $200,000.
Well, so the family was well taken care of, huh?
Yeah. Daisy returned to Wisconsin, but less than a month after the sinking, she entered a sanatorium, suffering from pneumonia and emotional disturbance. It is believed she spent several years in the facility, and following her release, she moved to Los Angeles. Her last few years, she suffered from tuberculosis, which led to her premature death in 1919 at the age of 40. She is buried in Los Angeles. You know, and they say emotional disturbance. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a medical doctor. I'm not a psychologist, but this has PTSD written all over it.
Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah, that's what it sounds like to me, too.
Yeah. I can't imagine that anybody who survived the Titanic felt really good about it. William's first wife, Mary, continued to live in Wisconsin and died in March 1952. Their daughter, Maud, later worked as a school teacher and was never married. She died in Green Bay in 1961. William's second wife, Lillian, moved to California and remarried in Riverside to another doctor. Following World War I, that couple settled in Arizona, where her new husband was appointed chief surgeon at the United Verde Mining Corporation. So she did really well in remarrying. Mm-hmm. But then he died prematurely in 1923. She went back to California and got married yet again to C.D. Danielson, which would now be her fourth husband. And during World War II, she lived on Catalina Island, Well, it was under the jurisdiction of the Coast Guard, and in 1947 moved to Laguna Beach, where she lived for the rest of her life. Lillian died in 1962 at age 86. She's buried in Anaheim, California. So she's, you know, another survivor of the Titanic. I don't know how it affected her mentally, but, you know, she had a bit of a life there, being married four times. And doesn't seem like it was like a rocky marriage situation. It seems like her husband just kept dying on her.
Yeah, just dying prematurely.
So, you know, which that in its own way is probably not emotionally great. So, so that's the main story. There's a second part of the story, but I'll stop here if you wanted to.
Well,
talk about
I just want to. So, I assume you found this story based on the research of the previous episode you stumbled upon.
That. Yes and no. So, I did the research on the previous episode, and then this guy came up in passing. But after the fact, I realized that a few years ago, I had done a homeschool class on the Titanic.
Okay.
And basically, I wanted to, when I did that class, I had written biographies, and a lot of these are pre-written. Like, this Titanic is researched very well.
Mm-hmm.
I put together, like, a list of all people who had Wisconsin connections, and I kind of handed them out willy-nilly to the class, and we see, like, who's going to survive the Titanic kind of thing. So, like, after I realized that, like, I'm like, oh, I actually have most of these notes already together. I just have to kind of, you know, clean them up a little bit.
Because I think it's wild that you found a you found a story of people from Wisconsin on the Titanic. I think that's really awesome.
Yeah.
So
it's funny that I forgot that I had it, though.
Yeah.
Like, this is like 4 or 5 years ago that I put the notes together originally, and I forgot that I did it.
This is like just an example of how many rabbit holes Gavin goes down in research that he just completely forgets all the cool stuff he's researched over the years.
Yeah.
Do you remember off the top of your head, like, how many people are on this list that had ties to Wisconsin that were on the Titanic?
I couldn't recall exactly, but it's not a lot. It's like 15.
Okay. Well, then that's a lot more than I would have guessed. Yeah. So,
well, it's, you know, it's over 2,000 people.
Yeah, there's bound to be somebody with some ties, but
yeah.
All right, so what's the other part of the story then?
Okay, so now we got the fun part of the story.
Okay, I thought that was pretty fun. So,
well, all right, so everybody's dead.
Okay.
All right, William's dead. His sister's dead. His wife is dead. His daughter's dead. They're all dead. Right.
Okay.
Okay. On the night of August 27th, 1987, vandals broke into the Minahan crypt at Woodlawn Cemetery by pushing in the metal gates, busting through the marble, and stole the skull of Dr. Minahan.
What?
See, this is the fun part. Another marble covering was also busted, but that slot was never used for a body, so they didn't find anything. After a cemetery employee noticed Friday morning, Coroner Jeannie Williams confiscated the rest of the body for safekeeping and to make sure that nothing more was stolen. As far as they could tell, no valuables were taken, just the head.
Weird.
Coroner Williams told the press, "Other cities in Wisconsin have had problems like this with grave robbing. It is on the upswing because cultism is on the upswing. They use remains for their rituals." And this is why I love this story. Just because of that quote. That the first thing that happens after this is that the coroner's like, yeah, we got a lot of cults that steal graves. And I'm like, yeah, this is the 80s.
I was going to say, this was not really a true thing, but a big fear in the 80s,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, that's the 80s. Like, now, the sheriff, to his credit, is not going along with that. Sheriff Leon Pishek said, I guess it's possible it's a cult, but we haven't seen much of that around here. We're working on something. We think we know why this was done. Sergeant Kenneth Boogie added, it also could be just a weird vandalism case where kids are involved. The police said they already had leads pointing to the fact that the vandals had left tennis shoe prints behind. Dr. Minahan's grand-nephew was Appleton Post-Crescent editor Michael Walter. He said, "The fact that Will's been dead for 75 years is quite irrelevant. Grave robbing is grave robbing, no matter how long the deceased has been buried. It's a terrible thing. I feel bad personally about it." Of course, you know, if they're going to get a family member on the record when everybody is dead, it helps that he has a grandnephew who works for the paper. Already by August 30th, less than three full days, the skull was recovered and a 17-year-old boy was taken into custody and charged with criminal damage to property. A second 17-year-old boy was arrested as well. The boys had been caught after bragging to a gas station attendant about what they'd done, and the employee then told the police. The boys no longer had the skull. It was found in a vacant lot on the southwest side of Green Bay.
So it sounds like it was just a senseless kid prank.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because the kids were juveniles, their names were not made public, so I have no idea who they are. And it's unclear to me what happened at the trial. It kind of dropped out of the news. The district attorney, John Zakowski, was sympathetic to the boys. He made no effort to waive them into adult court, even though they were 17. He totally could have done that. He said, "You had two kids who were drunk and on the spur of the moment decided to enter a tomb. That's all," he explained. Which I love that. I love that reaction. You find a grave broken into. The first thing is, a cult took it. They're doing some kind of weird ritual. Police are like, it's probably not what's going on here. They pick up two 17-year-old boys, and the DAs are just like, it's just two drunk kids having fun. All right, man, that's cool. Again, maybe the 80s were different. But I feel like if you're underage drinking and you break into a grave, that's usually frowned upon.
Yes, yes. I think I think that this one could have gone for quite a steep punishment because, I mean, come on. All the 17-year-olds out listening to this podcast, don't break into graves.
No,
and
definitely
steal.
Don't.
And if you're going to do it, don't steal somebody's head.
What would you steal?
If you're drunk and you break something, I mean, you stop there. You don't steal the head and throw it into an empty lot.
Okay, all right. I mean,
so that's crazy. And the fact that this just happened to happen to somebody that was also on the Titanic, again, just blows my mind.
Yeah, it was kind of like when the head was stolen, like in the paper, they were like, by the way, this guy was on the Titanic, you know? And the police are like, yeah, we don't think that has anything to do with it. Like, we're pretty sure that nobody around here remembers this guy was on the Titanic. Like, apparently it wasn't a very well-known story. Because by this point, even though, like, as established last episode, this family was a huge deal in Green Bay, by the 80s, they were nothing.
Yeah.
Like, people had already kind of forgotten them.
Yeah. The generations had just burned out and they weren't a big thing anymore.
Yeah.
So, wow. So, I think that one's even crazier than the last one. I think you stumbled upon something pretty awesome here, man.
Yeah.
You know, I never envisioned that we would be doing this episode on this podcast.
Yeah, who thought that we'd have a Titanic episode?
I mean, I could see having both these stories possibly on the podcast separately, but together as one story is incredible to me.
Yeah, we got the Titanic and grave robbing in one story. We did it.
So, Wisconsin has everything.
Yeah.
We've confirmed it today that whatever you want, this state has it. So.
Yeah.
Except for good weather. So.
Well, we're doing pretty good this winter.
I'm talking about just no winter at all.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
But all right. So do you got anything else for that one or should we wrap this episode up?
No, that's pretty much it. I mean, obviously, if people want to find out more about the Titanic, there's no shortage of information out there. It's super well documented. So
yeah, but this is the only place you'll find a story of a Wisconsin person, probably.
Well, I mean, you can find that online, but I don't think you'll find it as thorough as you find it here, because I definitely combined multiple sources and added some more to flesh it out a little bit. So I don't think that you'll find this story as completely told as you will here.
So do you know now, is this the end of the Minahan family, or are we going to revisit them at some point?
For now, it's done. Maybe there's another one, but I don't know about it at this time.
More than likely, if you haven't stumbled upon it after the research of these two, I'm guessing it's probably not out there.
Yeah.
But you never know.
I can promise you they'll come up again, but only because one of the brothers is an attorney.
Yeah, and he'll show up so, in different cases.
Yeah, so it's inevitable that his name is going to be dropped in certain Green Bay cases. But beyond that, I'm not aware at this time of any big tragedies or anything.
Cool. All right, well, we want to thank everybody for their continued support of this podcast, and we will be back in 2 weeks with another episode. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Fox City's Murder and Mayhem. Join us in 2 weeks for another exciting episode of Murder and Mayhem.